Gang, welcome, welcome to National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. This is your home. This is your music hall of free speech. It's the music hall where we let that awesome theme song, the Bonfire Polka, we let it play the whole way through just to get us all warmed up. And you can get warmed up by going to republicbroadcasting.org, clicking on the donate button, following the instructions. You can and you want to send us some money to keep this going. And also download the CoCertified app. How, you might ask? Well, you go to nationalbugle.com. You'll see the CoCertified icon. You can click on that and download the app. It'll tell you everything you need to know about the kosher question. Okay, today's Tuesday. We have with us Mark Collett. Mark, welcome to the show. All right, so Mark, we are having a little bit of audio trouble. We're not hearing you. I'm sure we will hear you. Okay, and if we need to reconnect, we can reconnect. You all can figure out how that's going to work. Just let me know when you're able to. Are you there? Okay, all right. Anyway, today we are facing the end of civilization. Yeah, you there?
Yes, I'm here. Yes,
I am. All right, welcome to the show.
For some reason, I did an update on my computer a couple of days ago, and of course, being a computer, it would have to reset all my settings in Skype, because it does it every time. But, well, not every time. If it did it every time, I'd know to straight away go to Skype. But it doesn't do it every time, does it? It just does it some of the time. So I was caught out there for a second, and now I can hear you, you can hear me, and we can get underway with the show. So sorry about that small small bit of interference.
No problem. If Skype didn't screw up some of the time, it wouldn't be a Microsoft product.
That's very true.
Yes, it is. Okay, well, are we sleepwalking towards World War III? I mean, it seems like we're just going off the edge. We've got this, you know, young club chick who's leading Finland into NATO. I don't know if that's a good idea. I don't think it is. And a slightly older, I don't know if she's a non-club chick, who's leading Sweden into NATO. Would you want to join NATO right now when NATO is attacking Russia? I mean, when NATO is trying to regime change Russia, is that a good time to join NATO?
You see, I find all this quite interesting. My answer would be obviously no. But the reason I find this so interesting is what we've actually got here is something that may well be a large distraction. And a lot of people are talking about this. It's already been intimated that their membership of NATO will never happen because Turkey is very eager to exercise their right of veto to let it happen, although it appears they are applying to join NATO. So if they're applying to join, but they know they're not going to get in, what's the game plan? Well, I think the game plan could very well be to create a lot of drama, to stoke tension, to stoke further tension with Russia, and potentially to create a big conversation about this. And while people are talking about this, while they're holding a big conversation about this, I mean, I've already seen Mitch McConnell this week saying, well, you know, this is the most important thing that's happening in the world. This is where everyone should be focused on. We all agree this. Well, I don't agree this. I think at the moment we're facing, you know, some, you know, existential crisis here in the West, which could see many, many normal people suffering immensely. We've got rising food prices. We've got skyrocketing interest rates. We've got real problems in almost every Western nation now, as largely a result of years and years of poor planning, poor financial decisions, and then everyone's favourite topic, which we haven't talked about for probably 30 seconds, COVID. Now, COVID has been this big game changer, and it's been a big game changer, probably not in the way people thought. At one point, everyone was like, you know what, this is going to usher in this gigantic surveillance state. It's going to be the beginning of the end. You know, we'll have restrictions in perpetuity. But that doesn't actually seem to have happened. But one thing that does seem to have happened is our economies, which were built on very shaky ground, our economies that were not built on anything stable, not backed up properly, were built on huge, huge borrowing rather than actual productive enterprise and booming business. Our economies are now faltering, and they're faltering because, with them being on shaky ground, if you build anything on shaky ground, if you've got a poor foundation, you only need one small tremor to bring down those economies. So if you build your house on shaky ground, well, you know, what's going to happen? Well, as I said, you only need a small tremor and your house is falling down. And for years, the West has built its economies on this shaky ground, on this idea of importing everything, you know, never being self-reliant, never being in charge of its own destiny. The West has always built everything on the idea that it would all be provided for by people overseas. We would import stuff. We would have a service-based economy. We wouldn't grow our own food. In Britain, we were paying our farmers not to grow food. Well, look, we've got these. At one point, they were calling them butter mountains. We had butter mountains and milk lakes. And, you know, people shouldn't have, you know, people didn't need to, worry about things. In fact, farmers were paid not to produce food because we had too much of it. We had this surplus and we could import it for cheaper. And, you know, producing our own food would be terribly unfair. It'd be unfair competition to other people in Europe. So farmers were sat around doing very little. A lot of farmers sold off their land, sadly, their prime farmland to developers and to other people so that these, it could be used for housing. It could be used to build, you know, football pitches. It could be used to create, you know, parking lots, shopping malls, whatever. But the fact is that prime farmland is gone now, sold off. You can't get it back. And we've got a problem. We've got a big problem. Now, obviously, there's a lot of talk about what's going to be happening with NATO. Are we going to be having World War III? But before we start worrying about World War III, we might actually need to worry about whether we're going to be able to feed ourselves, whether normal families are actually going to be hit by these economic problems and whether normal families are going to be sinking. And that's a big question, because I'll tell you now, there might be a lot of people talking about this, about Finland and Sweden, but that does appear to be somewhat of a distraction when normal people are facing such harsh times.
Well, normal people are facing harsh times really all over the world. And it's for one reason or another. Of course, you know, you've got, the economics. I mean, the economics, it started with what you're talking about, the idea that the West could import everything. And I remember 30 years ago, Ross Perot running for president, saying that it would be a problem. You know, it's a problem to import everything. It's a problem if we're not able to produce our own food or our own clothing. And now with the combination of the COVID, where there was all this self-inflicted shutdown, where we just shut down huge amounts of our industry, our small business, all got shut down. And then now the self-inflicted wounds of the sanctions against Russia, where, you know, Russia is a big part of the economy, the world economy. It was a major supplier of energy, and a lot of that is getting disrupted.
Can I just put in there, it's a major supplier of oil as well. And what people might not understand or might not be 100% to, you know, get to grips with straight away when you start talking about oil supply, well, fertilizers used to make crops don't just appear magically. There's no fertilizer fairy. There's no fertilizer fairy who drops fertilizer off. It gets made, it gets produced. And people might be saying, well, you know, what are you talking about, Mark? You know, obviously fertilizer gets produced. But what not everybody knows is that fertilizer actually gets produced from oil, from petroleum-based products. Right. It's petroleum-based fertilizer. So if crop yields are down and if food prices are going up, that will no doubt be negatively impacted by these sanctions on Russia, because we do need oil at a good price, and we need oil at a good price, not just so our motor vehicles run, but also fundamentally so that we can produce fertilizer, grow crops, and actually eat.
Right, right. I mean, it's methane-based. Largely a natural gas. When you look at our energy usage, okay, there's a lot for transportation, there's a lot for heating, there is an awful lot for fertilizer, which is, you know, more or less equivalent. I mean, these shares transportation, heating, electricity production, and agriculture, i.e. fertilizer production. These are roughly equivalent shares of what we do with our fossil fuels. It's huge. And so, of course, Russia produced the oil and natural gas. It also, just because it had that energy that was needed to produce the artificial fertilizer, when I say artificial fertilizer, I mean as opposed to cow dung or human dung, it exported fertilizer as is, and so there is going to be a massive food crisis around the world. And so, you know, part of it is the disruption of food growth in Ukraine, which has always been a breadbasket, but even more, it's the disruption of the fertilizer supply. And so we're seeing food prices going up around the world now. For Americans, for Britons, for most Europeans, rising food prices are a problem. For Pakistan or Bangladesh or Africa, much of the world, rising food prices means famine. It means food riots. And so we're going to have that around the world. And a world that's already been destabilized by COVID. And by the way, the COVID, you know, it's not as if it's gone away. I mean, they can roll out COVID whenever they want, but also that round of COVID that we had over these past couple of years enabled them to come up with the infrastructure of a totalitarian police state. So in the United States, they've got the infrastructure for keeping people out of stores. You have to have your QR code in order to... I saw this. You know, they didn't do it all over the United States, but they did in some places. And if you're in Chicago and you want to go in and get a pizza or whatever, get something at a restaurant, you had to have a QR code to show, you know, on your phone. And, you know, you've got in other places... where you've had quarantines, you know, Australia and whatnot, they've got systems where you can, where the government will ping you and say, where are you now? And you've got to ping them back with your echolocation, or you've got to show your face and your surroundings. So the infrastructure's there. Most people aren't subject to using it on a day-to-day basis, but the infrastructure's there. So, I mean, we're really heading into... It's almost everything that Orwell predicted. The only difference between what Orwell predicted and what, at least in the West, in the first world, that what we're heading into, is that there's just a lot more high. It's more high tech, and the distribution systems are much more efficient, which isn't necessarily even going to be a good thing. When you've got the infrastructure of repression, having it being high tech and efficient isn't necessarily your first choice. What do you think about that, Mark?
Well, I think you make a very interesting point, and I've got to say this. If we get into a situation where we're in a position where fundamentally there are going to be food riots, where fundamentally there are going to be people starving to death and doing anything that they can to basically get their hands on food because they are starving, their families are starving, their loved ones are starving. If that is the case, if we are actually in that position, well, I can say this with a massive degree of certainty. That is going to be something that the government would have to mitigate. The government would have to prevent that from happening. They would have to legislate against that. Now, if they were to legislate against food riots, they could well use what you've said, the COVID policies. They could well use what they learned from COVID against people, against food rioters, against people who are starving and are trying to get food for their family. This could be obviously a real and present danger. This could be something that fundamentally was rolled out again and again. And what's more, let's say people were actually starving. Let's say people were really, really struggling on a sort of an unprecedented level where people in the West have never struggled or have not struggled like in recent memory, should we say. And all of a sudden, the government wants to stop a popular rebellion or wants to stop an uprising or has an objective to prevent people organizing against their starvation. They could well use another round of COVID. They could well use COVID, the surveillance they built up during the time of COVID. Any of these things could be used against the general public, and that's very worrying. And what's more, I think they know that people would comply if they snapped their fingers and said, oh, there's more COVID out there. They know there's a large number of people who would comply with that. And I think that leaves us in a very, very difficult position, because fundamentally, there are going to be people out there who, if their families were starving and they were told, you know, it's COVID round two, guys, you know, stay in your homes, don't go out, you know, you can't go out and forage for food, you can't go out and eat, you know, this is for your safety. We know there are people who would follow that. So I think there's a lot of dangerous things swirling. And I've seen this sort of shortages and the problems we're facing as a result of COVID. But it could be something which is...
I hear our break music starting to play.
Consider this.
Are we coming up on the commercial? I think we are.
Dead people see only what they want to see. And frankly, most of us are still dead. Let me give you the lessons of gold and five easy lessons. Number one, don't buy it because you need to make money. You buy gold because you need to protect the money you already have. Don't ever look at the price as a barrier. Look at it as an incentive. Number three, don't buy its paper pretenders. We talked about that a lot. Buy gold. Buy the real thing in the form of coins and bullion. Fourth, don't fall prey to glitzy television or Facebook ads. Do your due diligence instead. And that's what I try to provide you with and have for 26 and a half years on the air. And 30 years in this profession. Fifth, don't allow naysayers to divert your interest. Allow yourself the right to protect your interests as you see fit. Jeff Bennett here. One of the ways you can do that is to contact Kettle Moraine Limited. Contact me by calling or texting me at 602-799-8214. 602-799-8214. You can also email me at kettlemoraineltd@cox.net. Let me help you protect your wealth and your family today. Once again, call or text us at 602-799-8214 or visit our website, Sierra Madre Precious Metals.com. Be glad to help you out. Be glad to answer your questions. That's what we're here for. No pressure, just good, hard, common sense. The decision then becomes up to you.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee by going to rbnhemppaste.com and ordering a trial pack of happy packets for $5 with free shipping. That's rbnhemppaste.com.
We are back. Those are the smooth sounds of Filbert Applebag. But Mark, you were getting to a very important point. Do you remember where you were before the break interrupted you?
Yeah, I was really just saying that fundamentally what we've got here is the mainstream, you know, your starting point is that COVID has led to this, but COVID may be a way, or COVID restrictions may be brought back in to mitigate this and to prevent people from organizing against their own almost planned starvation. I mean, to say planned starvation sounds, you know, very, very strong, you know, so this was all planned. But whether it was directly planned or whether it was, how can we put it, brought about through, you know, brought about accidentally, there was planning that led to this. Now, was it management? Was it mismanagement? Well, you know, who knows? Did they intend this, or did their botched policies just lead to this? Again, these are very, very difficult questions, and they're questions that, you know, obviously we seek to try and answer. But I can't give a definitive answer to. But fundamentally, whether they've planned this or whether this is a unintended consequence of their plans, it is still their fault. And that's probably the most important thing you can say. This is fundamentally the fault of those in positions of power all over the world who bought into this COVID madness, who, you know, made sure this COVID madness spread, that made sure people were locked down, that destroyed economies, that damaged supply chains. And obviously, the sad truth is that because of the damage that had been previously done to our economies and transforming our economies fundamentally from being actual economies to just being import, economies just being people who are basically living off imports and, you know, we can't produce anything ourselves, we can't make our own food, we can't do anything like that. All of that has now come home to roost in a massive way. And it's very, very sad, but there's now going to be great, great suffering because of this. Whether they planned this great suffering or whether this was a result, an unintended result of their plans, I don't know. but it's not going to be pretty.
I don't know how much it matters to whether they planned this or it was unintended. I think there were people who a year or two or three or four ago had desires. They had desires that looked like this. And some of them were cooperating with each other, but they weren't necessarily in a position to make it happen. And I think there are people who are actually responsible, directly responsible for the policies that made it happen, that weren't planning this. So I think at different levels, you've got people who are kind of planning some or the other of the consequences of what's going on, whether, we're talking about starvation, economic collapse. And you got some people who actually were in the position to implement policies, did implement policies without knowing what was going to happen, either through naivety or stupidity. And I think, a lot of people who listen to our shows are very, they tend to be smart and expect that everybody else is as perceptive as they are. And I think a lot of people in power, sitting in government, in high up in bureaucracies or in the political world, are not nearly as perceptive. And in some cases, maybe there's some self-deception because they know, I can't go there. I can't think about, I can't think about Jewish power. And they are able to successfully keep it out of their mind. And if you keep that out of your mind, you're going to be less perceptive, I think. So I think all this stuff is going on. We got about 30 seconds or maybe a minute before the next break. Is there any prospect? We saw movements against the COVID lockdowns gather strength and momentum, but also be crushed in some places, like in Australia. Is there any momentum gathering against the latest round of insanity, and in particular against the war?
I don't think there is. I think the war seems comfortably far away for most people. I think it's being heavily propagandized, but I think most people see the Ukraine as a strange, distant nation. And without being funny, I don't think most people in the UK could even tell you where it was on a map.
Yeah. Most people in America wouldn't have known anything about it, especially in our generation, had it not been for the Beatles song Back in the USSR, because the Ukraine girls really knocked me out. But that's about it. Nobody knows about the Ukraine. Well, okay. I'm still trying to time the break. We're doing this live. We don't usually do it live. But there it is. Those are the smooth sounds.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Extendivite really works. Here's just a few testimonials from Amazon. RL, 5 stars. Been taking this for 2 months now. I feel better. Have more energy. April. My husband started taking Extendivite, and he said he feels much better and has more energy. EW. Need to try. Everyone needs this for their health. Great product, great people. Josie. It works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. JC. Great product. Has worked well these last few years. To get your Extendivite today, go to extendivite.com. That's extendovite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
I could have started singing along, except I don't know Yiddish. All right.
That's reassuring to know.
I do plan to learn the words to that song one of these days. It's a good tune. Anyway, 20 years ago, on the brink of the Iraq War, you had massive demonstrations in London, in New York, in, was it Madrid or Barcelona, around the world. You had these enormous demonstrations before the war started saying we shouldn't have this war. And of course, we had the war anyway. And this time, there's no demonstrations. I am not aware of a single demonstration in the United States. The closest that you're coming in the United States are Trump rallies, and the Trump rallies are not anti-war, but Trump himself is, if you read the between the lines, is anti-war. And some of the people in the audience might be getting the message, but most of them aren't. So you've got really nothing. And in the political class, a few Trump accolades, people whose political careers started, for the most part, because of Trump, like Marjorie Taylor Greene, are the only people who are speaking out against the war and saying, you know, and usually using the argument, well, you know, we've got baby formula or we've got a foreign invasion here. Why are we caring about Ukraine? There's really nobody. I don't know of anybody who's saying, actually, the Russian accents are understandable because We've been provoking them. We provoked it. The Americans are wrong. Our State Department's wrong. Nobody's actually coming out and defending Putin. There's a few voices saying we shouldn't be doing the war. But there's nothing. There's nothing. Compared to 20 years ago, it's just amazing. What about in Britain? Is there anything? Is there any, like some of the radical members of the Labour Party, is there anybody out there saying that the war is not a good idea?
I'm not sure if there is. I think there might be some. I mean, I'm saying that, but I mean, I'm not really that important. But
Jeremy, what's in Jeremy Corbyn? Is Jeremy Corbyn saying anything, or is he all, you know, you wearing Ukrainian colors?
No, I don't think he's in on that. But I will say this, and this is an important point to make. There's a huge difference here between the Iraq war and between the Iraq war and what you're seeing here. And the reason there's a huge difference is because fundamentally what you've actually got, or what you had then, was British and American boots on the ground, and Iraq was seen, or Saddam Hussein was seen, as a little bit of a bad guy, like not a guy that was a nice guy, not somebody who was nice to his people. But he hadn't actually invaded anybody. He'd not actually got up to any sort of major misdemeanors, so to speak. He was just, he was there. He wasn't treating Kurds particularly well. And they had to fabricate a lot of evidence against him, which was all nonsense, all lies, just a huge tissue of lies, which was used to sell the war to the public. And fundamentally, all of those things turned people off. People didn't want the war. People were very unhappy with the war. And because of that, I think that it's fair to say that fundamentally, there was a massive backlash, millions of people on the street. And you're not seeing this time. And the reason you're not seeing this is because Putin has indeed invaded the Ukraine. Now, whether that's justified or not is a different thing. But he has invaded. So that's a big, big difference for most people. That's a big difference. Secondly, you've got a situation where there isn't going to be boots on the ground. So there was condemnation about the Iraq war from both the left and the right. The left was very much, well, we don't want to kill lots of innocent civilians. We don't want to kill lots of innocent Iraqis. You know, this is a terrible, terrible thing. But then the right was equally outraged. The right was very much on the side of, well, we don't want to see lots of British troops dying. We don't want to see our boys and girls being sent over there and being slaughtered in large numbers, or coming home with horrendous life-changing injuries. This is not what we want. This is not what we want. So both the left, quote-unquote left and right, both decided that this was a bad thing. So both were opposed. Now, the left were very, very good at basically going out there and marching and protesting and making a big fuss. They were very, very good at that, as they usually are. The right didn't make a big fuss in that way, largely probably because they wouldn't have been welcomed at those protests had they turned up. But I think what you've got to say about this is everyone was against it. But everybody is not against this war in that way, because it's completely different. And I think the way the government's playing this, the way the government are quite clearly saying, look, fundamentally, we understand that we're not going to send people out there. We understand there won't be boots on the ground. But Putin is a real nasty piece of work. Putin's this real nasty piece of work. And because he's a real nasty piece of work, what we must do is we must send our money there, our resources. We must send weaponry there. And we must support these people. And I think that is a much easier sell to the British public than anything to do with the Iraq war ever was. And because it's an easier sell, because it's something that the public are more likely to be amenable to, and the public have been fed anti-Russian propaganda, they believe Putin is a madman, they believe Putin is a threat to his own people, but now they fundamentally believe that Putin is a threat to other people. They see him as the aggressor, the invader. I think what you've actually got here is a very interesting situation, a very interesting situation where the public are happy with funds being sent there. The public are more amenable to the message of war. So this is something I would say that's a little bit of a, if you like, a masterclass in marketing, because the way this has been marketed to the people makes it far more saleable. However, one thing that is quite interesting is, again, going back to these food shortages, going back to the problems we're seeing here domestically, fundamentally, what you're actually saying is that British people are really, really struggling here. They're struggling to pay their tax, so things like council tax. They're struggling to put food on the table. Petrol prices, or as you call them, gas prices, are, you know, horrendously high. They've shot up about 63% in just a few months, just gone from over £1 a litre to £1.63. People are feeling the squeeze. People are feeling the pinch. And one thing that I think would be saleable to the public, and an anti-war message that would be saleable, is that whilst we're giving billions to the Ukraine in aid to fight a war which, you know, frankly has nothing to do with us, British people are genuinely struggling. British people are actually struggling here at home, and that money would be better spent on relief for British families. And I think that's about as much of an anti-war sentiment as you would likely get at this time from the British public when it comes to the Ukraine.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there were two wars against Iraq. There was the one that we were talking about, the second one under George W. Bush, but there was the first one under his father after Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait. And even that first one, there was a lot more opposition to that first war. And I remember the vote for the first war in the Senate. There were a lot of people who voted against it. I remember you didn't have the massive million person rallies against the war, but you did have demonstrations. I remember speaking at a fairly sizable demonstration myself. People were against the war. And I mean, it wasn't like the second time around, but where, you know, the second time around, you make the point that Saddam Hussein had just not invaded. He hadn't recently invaded a neighbor, although, you know, they were trying to pin 9/11 on him and to low info people, that stuck. But the first time around, he had just invaded Kuwait. But even then, there was knowledge among lots of people that, well, he invaded Kuwait because Kuwait was doing diagonal drilling and stealing his oil. There was at least that acknowledgement. This time, you know, there's nobody is defending Putin. I will defend Putin because you can, if you look at it this way, 2014, the American government, the American and, you know, the other governments were involved, but it was primarily, you know, the State Department. It was primarily Victoria Nuland. They overthrew the government of Ukraine, installed a Jewish-dominated government. It's always had either a Jewish prime minister or a Jewish president. They installed a Jewish-dominated government, and that government, among other crimes, a bunch of other crimes, has killed 14,000 ethnic Russians in the Donbass. 14,000 for 8 years. Putin was saying, look, stop this. If you, as long as you stop it, we will see to it that the Donbass is reincorporated into Ukraine, but you've got to stop the killing and, you know, the other harsh measures. For 8 years, waited for 8 years. And what does he get at the end? He's got the Jewish president saying, no, we're going to join NATO, and we might just get nuclear weapons. And to me, and I think to a lot of people, if they knew just those basic facts, they would have very different thoughts about who was right and who was wrong in this. But nobody defends Putin, even the people who are trying to speak against war, like Tucker Carlson. They'll throw Putin under the bus, but just say, this is causing us problems. This is causing us more problems than them. But nobody's out there defending Putin. And I guess, you know, part of the thing is if you defend Putin, you're going to be experiencing deplatforming. Fortunately, I've got RBN. RBN's got my back. And we need the listeners to have RBN's back. And I'll, one more time, make the appeal for funds. But, you know, there's nobody in the West who's making, you know, even Saddam Hussein had better defenders in the West than Vladimir Putin. I find it remarkable, but you probably can analyze why it's so. Why is it so? Tell me, Mark. Why did Saddam Hussein have more defenders than Vladimir Putin?
I think there's a couple of reasons, and they're actually quite interesting. It's quite actually interesting discussing this. I think the first reason is fundamentally, Putin is not going to have friends on the quote-unquote mainstream right. And the reason he's not going to have friends on the mainstream right is because he is a geopolitical, or Russia under him is a geopolitical power block, and it's a geopolitical power block that is, to all intents and purposes, sort of growing. It's a geopolitical power block which is increasing its sphere of influence. That's very, very important, and that's something that people like Mitch McConnell, people like Boris Johnson wouldn't like, because those people, whether they're characterized as this or not, I believe them to be empire builders. And because they're empire builders, they are going to be people who fundamentally oppose any other empire, wherever it comes from. So if Russia is the empire that is the other rising empire today, they'll oppose that. If China was, if India was, they would stand in opposition to any other empire. But the left also not going to be friends with Putin, because Putin is morally conservative. Now, none of our conservatives here are morally conservatives. This doesn't mean I think he's an ethno-nationalist. It doesn't mean I think he's a wonderful person. What it means is, fundamentally, I believe him to be a moral conservative. He stands for the church. He stands against LGBT rights. He stands for what we would call traditional family values. And because he stands for those things, the left aren't going to support him either. You're not going to have a huge line of leftists saying, stop the war, stop the war. You know, we like Putin. We must defend Putin, because Putin stands against them. Now, they might say, well, we shouldn't be getting involved. They might say, well, fundamentally, we need to be spending this money here at home. That may be something that some people say, but I don't think anyone will support him for those two reasons. People on the right have their reasons. People on the left have their reasons. Whereas with Saddam Hussein, I think he would have had fans, elsewhere, even though he probably wasn't for any of the things that the modern left would want here. He is far away and wasn't characterized by those things. So I wouldn't say that he was characterized by being anti-LGBT. He was characterized as being Islamic. Now, whether we want to admit it or not, the left have a love affair with Islam. The left often fetishize Islam in many ways, and Islam is allowed to be anti-LGBT because it's one of their sacred cows. So the left do ignore the conflicts within their special interest groups that they foster. So I can see why people on the left supported Saddam, and I can see why they wouldn't this time with Putin.
Hi. Tom Bolton for EaseOff. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC. 417-932-6419.
You know that nothing beats a storable food stockpile for readiness. But there are two problems with storable food. It's expensive, and eventually, it runs out. Then what? What happens to you or your family when there's not enough food to go around? In a true survival scenario, you need a renewable food source. That's why Seed Armory has developed a survival-grade seed vault that can produce over $25,000 worth of crops from just one kit. Unlike other seed vaults, we don't inflate our seed counts with fillers. All our seeds are 100% heirloom and non-GMO. Not a green thumb? Don't worry. We've written an easy-to-follow guide to guarantee your success from planting to harvest. For a limited time, we're offering an additional 10% off your order when you enter the code RBN at checkout. Go to seedarmory.com. That's seedarmory.com. Don't wait. Like everything else, seeds are in short supply.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
All right, we are back. So why is Saddam Hussein or Islamism more popular, more defensible than Vladimir Putin and his whiteness or whatever?
Well, I think there's a huge taboo about supporting Vladimir Putin in any way. There's this huge taboo here in the West. And there isn't a huge taboo about supporting Islam in the West. In fact, Muslims here in the West do have quite a lot of power. When you actually look at Islam here in the West and you take on board how much power it has in many British towns and cities around the country, if you turn around and say, we should not be bombing Islamic countries, there will be a large number of people who will get on board with that. There'll be a large number of people who will say that is a saleable policy. There'll be a large number of people who will actually vote for you for saying that. So even though there might be some people who support these wars in the Middle East or who support conflict in the Middle East, there are plenty of people who never will, because they are allied, essentially, to Muslim nations. They are Muslims and they have brothers and sisters abroad. And I think that puts Vladimir Putin in a very different category, because I don't think there are vast numbers of Muslims sorry, of Russians living here in the West that, you know, have power, that could lobby for power for Putin, or for the West to be more amenable to Putin. And
supposedly there are a lot of white people and Christians in the West.
And many of those white people and Christians, unfortunately, are some of the most brainwashed people within the West. They will be the people hopping around demanding more aid to the Ukraine, demanding more Ukrainians come here. And when you see these Ukrainians, they're not actually Ukrainians. Some of the Nigerians, Somalians, etc., that just happened to be in the Ukraine or claim they were in the Ukraine at the time when the conflict broke out. So
are we going to get the Congo? Are we going to get all these Africans coming to Europe, fleeing the brutal civil war in Ukraine?
Yeah.
Hey, and one last question. Is NATO a suicide pact?
I don't know. I'm not sure. And I'm not sure if things escalate, whether NATO would be able to match its bark with its bite. I'm not sure whether that would ever happen. One thing that we do know is there has never been a hot war between two nuclear-armed nations. That has never happened, and I don't think any world leader has the desire to see that happen, because that would be potentially the beginning of the end for not just those two nations, but for the whole world. And one thing that you can see here in the Ukraine is it is a proxy war.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we don't have a leader in the United States. Most people couldn't tell you who's actually running things in the United States, and to the extent people do, they wouldn't be naming the same person. Anyway, thank you so much for joining me, Mark.
Thank you. It's been fantastic. Always love coming on the show, and look forward to being back next week.
And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
American Freedom News is your daily website that will keep you fully informed on what both the good guys and bad guys are doing in the information war in which we are all engaged. Fed up with the lies of the fake news media and the censorship of big tech giants? American Freedom News is the solution, as we provide truth and knowledge on all the vital issues of the day. American Freedom News believes in America first. The establishment wants us split into numerous hostile groups rather than uniting in a common cause against the corrupt oligarchy that is plundering America and the world. Many more Americans are waking up and realizing they are the victims of the ongoing Great Replacement and Great Reset. But the malevolent forces trying to systematically destroy America can and will be defeated. Be fully informed by reading American Freedom News, the best news and information site on the internet. Go to AmericanFreedomNews.us and find out for yourself. That's AmericanFreedomNews.us.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.